BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Maybe the Pac-12 learned something from the last time around, right? You're supposed to learn from your mistakes. Maybe Oregon State and Washington State last time realized they stared at each other. They trusted too much. They sat back and waited. They hemmed and hawed along with the other presidents in the conference. Maybe they learned something. Because late last night, I got tipped off that something was coming. And that something is something we have talked about for several months. Pac-12 taking four new members. San Diego State, Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State into the Pac-12. What does it mean? What happens next? Is it enough? We're going to talk about those things on today's show. We have great guests today. Jaden Robinson, defensive back, Oregon State, will be with us. Dan Lanning, Oregon coach, will be with us. We have a lot to talk about as it pertains to the football, but I want your rapid reaction. You've had a little time to absorb this. What do you make of it? 503-417-7575. I'll help you understand what I think is going to happen next. On yesterday's show, I said they would take four. I had UNLV among the four. Why didn't they take UNLV? I think I know. We'll talk about that as well. But I want your reaction to what happened. I'll tell you what my reaction was. It was a rare occasion in which Anna and I decided to go to dinner. And I should have known that the minute that I set my phone down, the minute that I relaxed, the minute that I left my laptop at home, that the Pac-12 would go, this is the right time to do this. The Pac-12 conference last night was scrambling around, and I got tipped off by a source who said, hey, you need to know they are going to add some schools. It is coming. And, of course, last night I posted at about 10 o'clock, 10:30, that I knew that it was four schools, and then there were six. When you add those four to Washington State and Oregon State, and certainly a lot of people trying to make sense of what happened. I think Oregon State and Washington State fans are largely encouraged by what they're seeing. They have been waiting for some action. This was the most likely outcome, I think, as we looked at outcomes, going to the Big 12, going to the ACC, those things, the door and those things, was slammed shut a few weeks ago. And it became evident that, I kept telling you two bites of the apple. That's what I was hearing. I did not know that the first bite of the apple was going to come this week. Frankly, days before the Apple Cup. Did they do that on purpose? Did Oregon State and Washington State, did they fast track the decision to have these announcements made in front of those games? I mean, think about it. If you're Washington State, it helps you sell more tickets for the Apple Cup. And if you're Oregon State, it adds a little bit of buzz to the stadium on Saturday at Research Stadium. There'll be a couple of football games being played, but were there other games being played on top of that? Further, for people who understand the college football playoff, this will make sense to you. And for the rest of us, because sometimes it's like a foreign language trying to figure out what these college teams are doing, it's worth reminding that the automatic berths to the CFP, they don't go to the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Group of Five. They go to the five highest-ranked conference champions. There isn't an automatic berth in the Big Ten. There isn't an automatic berth in the SEC. But we all know that the Big Ten champion is going to be among the five highest-rated conference champions, and the SEC champion is going to be there as well. And so we know that those are pretty much like they're automatic. Well, as you think about what the Pac-12 did today, frame it with that conversation, because you have the four Power Four conferences, and their conference champions will, in 99.9999% of years, be among the top five highest rated conference champions. So they're going to be four automatic berths in those conferences. It leaves one left over. And everybody calls it the Group of Five berth, but as you look at what the Pac-12 did, and frankly did to the Mountain West Conference, it now leaves you going, gosh, San Diego State, Boise State, Oregon State, Washington State, Fresno State, Colorado State, and whoever else, these two mystery candidates that will be added between now and July of 2026, that conference in most years is going to be among the top five conference champions in the polls. And so it does become kind of the same as the Big 12 champion, the ACC champion. You do have to worry about the American, or you have to worry about an outlier school if the Mountain West Conference reconstitutes in a way that is formidable. You have to worry about that. But most of the people in the industry believe what the Pac-12 just did was elevate itself into the fifth position, where it becomes the fifth most important conference, the fifth most powerful member, and a member that in football years, in some football years, can probably look over at the ACC or the Big 12 and say, hey, our conference champion is as good as your conference champion. We'll chew on that today. Further, you know, there's a lot of money mixed up in this, and it's really easy to be a naysayer. It's really easy to sit back and be like, oh, this won't work. Oh, this sucks. Oh, you know, there are media members that are out there that make a career off just taking the negative position without really researching or informing themselves about what's going on. And I hear a little bit of that out there today nationally. People that were weighing in, I kind of read and listened, and I went, oh, I don't really think they understand. You know, $17 million exit fee that these four schools are paying to the Mountain West Conference, $43 million that the Pac-12 is going to pay to the Mountain West Conference. It gives Gloria Navarez, the Mountain West Conference commissioner, a little bit of a war chest herself to now go out and try to see if she, you know, can she take Tulane? Can she take University of Texas, San Antonio? What else can she do? Can she give more money to some of her members to try to keep them there? Like, it gives her some opportunity and flexibility. But I have to think that the four schools that left the Mountain West Conference didn't just leave the Mountain West Conference because they were bored. They left because they saw something they liked. They saw something that was attractive, much in the same way that Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA looked over and went, hey, we need $50 or $60 or $70 million in media rights money. We'd like to have that. Forget tradition. We're out the door. I think you're seeing some of that happening with San Diego State, Boise State, and others. It's an interesting development. I think you're going to have to wait to see who these other two schools are. If I'm the Pac-12, just spitballing here, I wait to see what happens with the ACC before I fill those seats. Somebody told me late last night, and believe me, I was up all night. Somebody told me that they're keeping the seats warm for Stanford and Cal. I said, that's ridiculous. Stanford and Cal are in the ACC. They're not going to be able to exit any easier than Florida State or Clemson. And I kept repeatedly being told, just suspend your disbelief for a little bit and see what happens. So Stanford and Cal, are they in play? Have they softened their stance? Remember, forever, they acted like snobs, that their academics were too good for Boise State and San Diego State and Fresno State. They would never have allowed those schools to come into the Pac-12 while they were on guard. They fled to the ACC saying, well, there's academics here. But the truth is, you look around at some of the academic deficiencies in the ACC, Clemson among them, and you say, well, is it any better than what the Pac-12 has just, or any worse than what the Pac-12 has just put together? I think it's worth sticking around to find out what happens here. And ultimately, we all know that what happens eventually, is that college football splits away from all the other sports, and college football becomes its own thing, and college football, leaves behind the old conference affiliations and the old ways and maybe some of the traditions of the past. That maybe it's the top 48 teams, maybe it's the top 50, maybe it's the top 60. But what the Pac-12 is doing today, or has done already, 6 a.m. this morning, the Pac-12 has announced that they're going to fight back. They're not going to accept relegation. They're not just going to, disappear from college athletics, as much as it would make some people out there happy if Oregon State, Washington State just went away. They're not going to go quietly. They fought for the money. They fought for control of the assets. They endured the jeers. They kept fighting when people said they should give up. There's a little John Wick in their story, isn't there? As Oregon State and Washington State are going, you know what? We're gonna punch back today. There's two seats still open. I think UNLV is probably a fallback option. It could always go get UNLV between now and, you know, July of 2026 if you need to have them. But I think that Oregon State and Washington State would be foolish if they didn't try to lure Stanford and Cal back and create a regional conference in the Pacific time zone that, you know, is nothing like the old Pac-12. It's not coming back in its old form. You're not getting USC and UCLA back. You're not getting Oregon and Washington back. But you'd be getting something back, and you'd be getting access to the playoff. That conference champion, that's awful interesting to me. In 2026, Boise State, San Diego State, Oregon State, Washington State, and some others will suit up for a football season knowing they just have to beat each other and win that conference to get to the playoff. There'll be no climbing over Alabama or Georgia. There'll be no clawing and scratching to get by USC and Penn State and Oregon and Washington and Ohio State and Michigan. No, you won't have to beat those schools to get to the playoff. You'll just need to beat each other. It's interesting to me. You'll hear a little Teresa Gold on today's show. I talked to her earlier today, did a quick kind of informal interview where I asked her two or three questions. You'll hear a little bit of that. But, you know, I think I like what the Pac-12's doing here. They're trying to, they're trying to live to play another day. They're trying to matter. They're trying to position themselves for whatever comes next. And I think they took a step in the right direction by adding those four schools. I'm pumping the brakes a little bit and calling it like a landmark victory for their conference or, you know, whatever everybody else wants to call it, because I need to know what else they did and what else they're going to plan to do. Now, I asked Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner, why expand to six? Why only six? Here's Teresa Gold's response when I said, why are you going only to six? Why not just fill it all the way to eight?
Why six? Why not go to fully eight?
Well, I think at this point in time, John, as we were kind of evaluating options against our guiding principles and kind of what we want for Oregon State and Washington State moving forward, as we kind of looked at our criteria and what we wanted to evaluate in potential institutions, it became really, really obvious that these four institutions, based on their tradition of athletic excellence, you know, their academic profile, kind of how they prioritize athletics, their desire to compete at the highest level. I would also say there's kind of a mindset that they have that I think is very consistent with Oregon State and Washington State around strategic thinking, unconventional approaches, really being at the forefront of college athletics. I think all of those things made it really clear that there was a great fit. And ultimately, the four of them applied and we accepted their application. I think the idea then is for the six of us as partners and, you know, conference, you know, members in the future to then really get together and strategically talk about and think about our vision for the future and what that's going to look like.
That's Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 conference commissioner. You're getting that exclusively. Nobody else is hearing, no other radio show is hearing from the commissioner of the Pac-12 today. And she humored me by just answering a few questions. I said, I think people need to hear it in your words. Now, Stephen, do you think they made this announcement in front of these rivalry games intentionally, or is it just, hey, this is how it worked out?
Well, that was my first thought, John, as I saw the news and I thought, well, this is weird. Oregon State plays Oregon. Washington State plays Washington. Colorado State plays Colorado. There's going to be a lot of eyeballs on that game as well. Like, it seemed like it was really, really weird timing. Boise State just played Oregon, had a really nice game against them. Maybe should have won the game. You know, comes down to the last second of a field goal there. It did seem like it was planned out very carefully, and I think it's really smart because the college football slate on Saturday, not the greatest of slates, and the Oregon State Oregon game, Washington State Washington game. People are going to be having their eyeballs on that because of, you know, the rivalry games being played earlier in the season compared to the end of the year. And now you got this announcement. I think it was perfect timing. Like they are capitalizing on the publicity they're going to get. And then of course with the Colorado State Colorado game, like we all remember what happened last year in that game. So many people watched that game in Colorado, and now it's going to be a rematch back at Colorado State where that place is going to be, you know, popping as well. So yeah, I think the timing was perfect, and I think they did it definitely a strategic way.
Teresa Gold also talked about media rights. I asked her, you know, obviously these schools, are they running towards something? Do they know something? Do they have a consultant who told them, hey, your media rights are worth $10, $15, $20 million a year? I don't know. What were they told? Because you don't pay $17 million to buy yourself out of the Mountain West and just to run to something that, you know, make a parallel move. There was something that these schools saw. What did they see?
The between the exit fees and the potential poaching penalties, that's a significant amount of money. There must have been something to run towards there financially for those four schools, not just running away from something. Is it fair to say that you guys had done the legwork on that front and see a media rights future that could potentially have this all make sense?
Yeah, well, look, I think, appreciate the question, John, and you're always so thorough and so diligent and doing your homework. As you can imagine, I'm not in a position, at least in the near term, to comment on the business terms of our membership agreement. But I do think we're really excited about the possibilities that are in front of us, not just with media rights. I think media rights is certainly a piece of it that we're really looking forward to. And we're looking forward to establishing a strategy with these institutions that we know have great value in the marketplace. But I really think looking holistically at our entire commercial enterprise and what that's going to look like moving forward with these six, and then ultimately, you know, long term, any additional members that apply for membership.
Interesting to hear her kind of talk about that. Also, I asked her to kind of give some clarity on the CFP, College Football Playoff berths. Top five highest rated conference champions get automatic berths. This version of the Pac-12, in most years, you'd think that the conference champion would get into the playoff. Here's Teresa Gold.
There's some confusion among, I think, readers and listeners with, and your fans, about the College Football Playoff and how this potentially could work. Because this conference looks like it would be a pretty formidable football conference, and in most years have access to the College Football Playoff. Can you help explain how that works under the current format, or in 2026 and beyond, how that would work? Top five rated conference champions get in. Kind of would expect this conference to be one of those five in most years. Or have you studied that?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, I sit on the CFP Management Council and have been heavily involved in kind of crafting and mapping out the future of the CFP. And I think as we, you know, as these four institutions applied and got accepted by our board, commitment to football success at the highest level and our ability year in and year out to be in that mix of the five highest ranked conference champions and having regular access to the CFP, not only as one of the five highest rated conference champions, but hopefully in consideration for at-large berths. That's definitely part of the consideration and the conversation. And I think these four institutions bring a lot to the table in that regard.
Yeah, they're gonna negotiate for more money, Stephen. They're going to want more money. They're going to want more access. It's not a bad play. They're better off today than they were yesterday. But I still need to see who's in those final two seats. And if I'm them, I keep them warm for Stanford and Cal. I try to wait out and see if there's some chaos in the ACC. Maybe Stanford can drop sort of the arrogance and come to the reality that, you know, the college athletics world and the academic world don't always need to line up. But Cal, I think, certainly would do it in a heartbeat, given that they're getting a reduced distribution in the ACC.
Do you think if the Pac-12 can't get Stanford and Cal, that almost but guarantees them a guaranteed spot in the College Football Playoff, like if the winner of their conference?
Yeah, but you still need to fill those two seats. And, you know, I think they're probably going to hold a beauty pageant if they can't get Stanford and Cal. In fact, somebody told me that. They said, hey, if they don't get Stanford and Cal, it becomes a beauty pageant. You start looking at, do they go into Texas, UTSA? Do they go after Tulane? Do they try to get, a team from the American? Or do they just say, you know what, UNLV, come on in? And bring in maybe one other school. But if I'm them, you charge with all your might towards Stanford and Cal, and you try to get them back into the Pac-12, because if you can do that, I think it's a pretty solid conference that can make an argument that it is a Power 4 or Power 5 conference and therefore is entitled to a bigger distribution. Because remember, the distributions for the playoff are attached to schools. So if you can put two Power 4 members in those two empty seats, you can go with a straight face to the CFP board and you can say, hey, we're a Power 4, we're a Power 5, as Scott Barnes has been saying for weeks. Jaden Robinson, Oregon State defensive back and team captain, is joining us in front of the Civil War. Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach, later in the show. Leave it here.
To the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Our next guest, team captain, defensive back, man of the world, Jamba guy, Jaden Robinson, defensive back, Oregon State, joins us every Thursday, courtesy of Jamba. Life is better blended. It is Civil War week. Before we get into the football, Jaden, give me an idea of the conference expansion news. How did that kind of go over in your world?
Man, you know, it's a good thing. You know, I got some young teammates on my team, so it's a good thing, looking forward to them, giving them a championship to play for these next coming years, So I think that was a good step for them.
Yeah, I think the conference, get some company. It's not just two against the world. You get a little bit of company, and you get some football programs that have had some success in there. Give us an idea. You've been watching film on Oregon. What do you see on film when you look at the Ducks?
I see a well-coached team, but nothing out of the ordinary. As long as we're on our P's and Q's during the week, which we have been, then I think we just go out there and execute. It'll be a good game.
The rivalry itself, a lot of people get hyped up. You've been a part of this rivalry for a while now, and you've had an experience. You've been on the winning side, you've been on the losing side. Give me an idea of how you manage your emotions for this one, because some guys will fly around and maybe have too much emotion, and obviously you need it to play the game. So what's the right amount of emotion to play a football game with?
Just the right amount, somewhere in between, not too low, not too high, somewhere where you could keep the pace, the physicality, the effort, the intensity, but still be able to get your job done, not making stupid plays, getting dumb penalties, that's more the approach we're having this game, to move smart, get the job done and do it that way, the right way, the clean way.
There is a real challenge for the defensive backfield. You guys are encountering some wide receivers this week who have some proof of performance, and guys that you may have played against before or played against in 7-on-7 or even in high school. When you look at Oregon's wide receiver grouping, what do you see there?
I see a lot of talent. I've guarded some of the best receivers, in the game over my course of being here, nothing new, go out there, execute technique, fundamentals, eyes, hands, feet, all works together, especially as well as the rest of the defense, but as far as for the defensive backs right now, going into this game, we just going in with the plan that we got and, executing the fundamentals at the end of the day.
Jaden Robinson with us. You get a razzmatazz this week on game week, or are you going another direction with your Jamba?
Oh, definitely. Today, actually, I just got Jamba. I had to sit 7 a.m. lift this morning, went right to Jamba after. I got me a, nice little small fruity pebble, off the secret menu, But Raz, I had that on yesterday. I brung my DBs, some Jamba earlier this week. I got them white gummy and razzmatazz, to choose from. So I had to take care of them real quick.
That's awfully nice of you to bring, you know, to share your jamba with your teammates. Did the guys know it or just surprise them with it?
Nah, they didn't know. You know, they was happy when I brought it to them. You know, brought some juice to the morning, you know, on a Wednesday work day. So.
You shut out San Diego State. I was there at Snapdragon Stadium, and it was a great defensive performance. What does that feel like when you leave a zero on the scoreboard behind you?
You know, man, it feels good. You know, there's still a lot of work to be done. You know, we still got some stuff to clean up, you know, that we might see later in these next coming weeks, you know, against different opponents. But, you know, to leave with a zero is always a good thing.
Jaden, you know, the fans are excited about the game because there's, you know, some animosity there and emotion there about what happened a year ago. But do the players understand, like you do, because you've been around, but do the young guys understand what happened a year ago? Or does that even matter in a football game?
You know, I don't think it matters. You know, as of right now, you know, I don't think any one of us have thought about the last game that happened last year, you know, especially with transfers and just things like of that nature. You know, only people who really know is like me, Bray, Josh, I think. So, you know, it's not in the air right now. You know, I don't think that's where guys' heads are. You know, I think we're real focused and locked in on the game we got this weekend.
I had a really good interview with your coach yesterday, Trent Bray. I got him out of his shell a little bit. Like, you know how he can be a little stiff with the media. He just can't. It's not where he's most comfortable, right? In front of the room, you know, doing an interview. But I asked him about his playing days, and I really got to give you credit, because remember when we were talking about tackling Jam Griffin last week, and I asked him, he had Steven Jackson in that backfield. He had to tackle that guy in practice. That guy is a monster.
Hall of Famer.
Got him out of his shell. I mean, he started talking about it. He said sometimes he won that battle, sometimes Steven Jackson won that battle. I don't know. I don't know if I believe that. Like, I can't see Steven Jackson losing that battle. But does Trent Bray jump in there and drills? Like, do you get an idea of what he was like as a player during coaching, like watching him coach?
Oh, most definitely. I know that he has his head down. He's working all the time. You know, he has a ongoing motor. You know, I don't think he ever slowed down back in the day. You know, so like. Just seeing those things, you know, through his everyday coaching, how he runs to the ball, you know, it's something that stuck with him, you know, it's something that was engraved in him, you know, since he came up playing the game, you know. So it's just something, you know, to take note of. And just even him being a coach, you know, just it transfers. So it's crazy.
Your memories of Civil War football games, you got one to play on Saturday, but, you know, let's say you and I are on a porch years from now, and I say, what do you remember from the games you played before now? What memories do you have of this rivalry?
Man, definitely the one we had at home, you know, with a half stadium, you know, that was definitely the best feeling. But, you know, just through all the Civil Wars I've been through, you know, just the ups and downs of the games, you know, the emotion that's involved in it, you know, you never forget that, you know, and only those people on the field who you play with, you know, your teammates know that. So that's just something that you'll always have with you that you'll never forget.
The game 2 years ago where you guys are down 21 in the third quarter and your offense just kept running the ball, your defense makes plays, Jaden Grant comes up with that big stop on fourth down, tackling Bo Nix. What was that like to be part of that?
Man, it was just something about that DB core that year, you know, like, man, it's crazy to think about, you know, it brings goosebumps. But, you know, when he did that, you know, he called it, you know, he said he's going to pull it, and, you know, he's going to make the play. He called that on the field and he did that. So, you know, it's a great feeling, man. It's a good feeling.
Wait, so Jaden on the field on the fourth down, what is he, yelling it out or is he just telling you quietly?
He called a certain call that we call when, you know, we got to fit on this run on this side, and he ended up doing that, and Bo Nix ended up pulling it, and he made the play.
Yeah, it looked like he saw
big time plays in big time games.
It looked like he knew it was coming. Is that good? Have you talked to Jaden? Because I know, you know, I sent him a text after, you know, he got cut in an NFL camp. I sent him a text trying to tell him to keep his chin up, but I know you and he were close, and, you know, you've kind of filled that role of the guy who's been in the program for a while and is mentoring the young guys. Do you stay in touch with Jaden and other guys who have left?
Oh, definitely. You know, they were a big part of, you know, why I came back, you know, just seeing things from first year in the league, you know, how rookie cuts go, how getting waived, you know, getting signed, released here, traded, all that goes, you know. So I'll talk to all those guys. I continue to talk to those guys, you know. That's the room, you know. That's what's been built over these past 5 years, you know, success on defense. So, I still talk to those guys every day. So,
yeah, tonight is a light night for the coaching staff. You know, the coaches will spend time with families. How do you spend like a Thursday night, you know, the game looming?
You know, I'll be with my family, with my teammates. You know, I call my family. You know, I got a dog. I kick it with my dog. I play the game. You know, that's how I kind of sit back, relax my mind. If not that, you know, I eat or just cook on a Thursday. You know, I got a lot of time, or I get ready to pack for the next day. But, you know, I'm always just keeping my mind moving, you know, and then I sit down and watch film later in the day just to get my mind going and keep it focused on what the tasks we got at hand this weekend, you know, every weekend. So that's just kind of how I go about my Thursdays.
You have a dog. What's your dog's name?
Junie. It's a girl. Blue Nose Pit.
This is a dog. Like, have you had the dog for a while, or you just get the dog?
No, I've had it probably like a year and a half now. She just turned one, probably a couple months ago. She's 1.5 now, though.
Now, give me an idea, like, you know, because that's a big responsibility. Like, and you've got practice, you've got film work, you know. So, do you get out to the dog park, or take her for a walk, or take her for a run? What are we talking about?
Occasionally, like, I'll go on a run with me and my lady. You know, my lady takes care of her mostly while I'm at work, you know, on the field. So, it's kudos to her for doing that. But, yeah, when I have time, you know, I take her on walks, definitely. I take her to the bathroom. I'll take her down the street, around the corner, you know, on a good walk, you know, for me to walk out some lactic acid. So, you know, I'm always working, so I'm bringing my dog along with me. So, just things like that.
I love it. Jaden Robinson, go get it on Saturday. We'll be watching you. I'll see you at the stadium. You got a lot of people pulling for you, and have some fun out there.
Yes, sir. Definitely will. Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. I'll talk to you later. There's Jaden Robinson. That interview every Thursday, courtesy of your local Jamba, where life is better blended. Dan Lanning, Oregon coach, coming up at 4:20 right here. We'll go one-on-one with Dan Lanning. What's wrong with his team? Did he solve it? What did he find in the third quarter? We'll see what mood Dan Lanning is on a rivalry week. Is he light? Is he airy? Is he in a good place? Is he uptight? I don't know. We'll try to get a sense for that. Plus, coming up, we'll take a trip around the world of sports, fill you in on everything going on. Any Shannon Sharpe? Has he been on Instagram today, Steven?
Not that I saw. No? I haven't got the alert.
Crying
yet.
Out loud. For crying out. Do you think he did that on purpose?
No, I don't think he did it on purpose. But I think
you
it was
don't?
I think it was him though.
I wonder if he did it on purpose.
What would be the positive of doing that?
Well, did it hurt him?
No, it didn't hurt him, but
did it help him?
I don't know that it helped
him.
Did
it bring some attention to his podcast? Did it improve the image of Shannon Sharpe? It didn't hurt him.
I mean,
just
I
was saying.
Well, good for him.
Just saying.
Proud of him.
Leave it here. You got the bald faced truth. So much more ahead. Bye.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Colorado State coach Jay Norvell talking about the rivalry with Colorado.
This game was played in Mile High Stadium or in Boulder. And so they never really allowed the, you know, little stepbrother to have the game at home. And so we have the game at home. It was supposed to be played in our new stadium a couple years ago, and because of COVID, it was canceled. So there's been a lot of anticipation to show off our new stadium, to show off our campus nationally, and this is a national game. It's national TV. A lot of people saw us play last year. I mean, almost 10 million people watched the game last year. And so it's just it's an awesome opportunity for our campus and our kids. And, you know, and then we're not going to play this game until 2029 again. So the rivalry disappears for years. And so it's just it's a very unique opportunity for our program
unique opportunity. Those teams do not like each other. They didn't like each other a year ago. And it was fantastic to see that game last year. I'm leaning towards Colorado State winning that game, Steven.
Yeah.
How am I doing there? You feel the same way or no?
I'm feeling the same way, yeah. I just don't like the vibe that Colorado's putting out there. I know Colorado State's struggled a little bit this season as well. They'd had a bad performance at Texas. But I think that this is a type of game that they're really shooting for. Like, they have their minds, and they have had this game circled since that loss a season ago. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think now there's some momentum. You know, they join the Pac-12. Like, I think it's all lining up for a Colorado State victory at home over Colorado.
Keep an eye on that one. Meanwhile, at the Apple Cup, Jack Thompson, the throw-in Samoan, former Washington State quarterback. He was on yesterday's show. I don't know if you caught this. I asked him how he feels about Washington. And he did not mince words.
Well, I hate him. I hate the situation. I hate what the president of the University of Washington did. I thought it was just a terrible move. So I'm kind of biased. I'm not gonna hide anything. I'm rooting for the bees to kick the ducks' asses, and obviously I want the Cougs to do the same with the Huskies. It's personal.
Jack Thompson says it's personal. It sounds like he wants to suit up, although he did say that it was he could only last maybe one play as a linebacker, not a quarterback. Meanwhile, head coach Jake Dickert, the coach at Washington State, trying to get some Washington State fans to show up to the neutral site game. They'll be playing it in Seattle, NFL Stadium. 38,000 tickets have been sold. Dickert making a passionate plea
to showing up and being here for this team, right? That has to happen. Right, last week, you know, I was very proud of what the attendance was, but at the end of the day, we didn't sell out every seat. That is the goal. That is my marker. That is the expectation. I really believe that. You know, so whatever our best is, I've talked about best for 3 years here, and whatever our best is as a fan base, it needs to happen this weekend. Right, so we'll know a lot where, you know, if you're pissed off from what happened, show up. Right, if you're excited about it, show up. Whatever it happens, show up, be there, be loud. And show what our best is as Cougs. That's all I ask. And hopefully, just like from our football players, we'll deliver every chance we get.
I think Washington State, like Colorado State, Stephen, they're getting points in this game. It opened at 8.5 points. They were an 8.5 point underdog, which is ridiculous. They should not have been an 8.5 point underdog. I think they're the better team right now. They might not be the better team at the end of the season, but they played their asses off last week against Texas Tech, won that game. I'm watching Washington. I see a team that's played bad competition and done okay against bad competition. I'm not sold that Washington can win this game. I picked the Cougars to win it.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I don't think that's a good opinion, fair opinion. I think you're wrong in this spot, though. I think you have a right opinion, but I think you're wrong here. I think Washington's going to get the win. I worry about the Washington State defense. It hasn't been great, and you look at what Arizona did last year to Washington State. Big-time game. It was Arizona, I believe, was 3-3. Washington State was 4-1 going into that game. Arizona put it on them and Pullman 44-6, and now Jed Fish has a little better talent, has some of the guys coming back from last year that were on that Arizona squad. He brought them over. I think Washington's going to be ready for this game as well. Like, I don't think they're overlooking the Cougars with how they've played the first couple weeks and looking well, looking good. So I worry about that Cougar defense. I think Washington will be able to score. I think Fish will have some type of idea of how to stop that Washington State offense with Mateer, who's been awesome, though. I mean, Mateer has been great at quarterback. He is running around, making plays. But I do like Washington to win and to cover that game, especially under when it gets under the 7.5.
We totally disagree on that game. I think that was the easiest pick for me. That game, the other game that I think is an easy pick this week is you have Cal, who have been very good. They are at home against San Diego State, who did not move the ball, could not score on Oregon State. I think Cal's defense is as good or better than Oregon State's defense. I don't think San Diego State can score more than maybe a touchdown or a field goal in that game. And I think Cal would probably win that game something like 31-3, 31-7. I really like Cal in that San Diego State game.
No, I agree with you on that one. That Cal defense, they caused, I believe, 4 turnovers against Auburn, at Auburn. So that's a tough place to play, and they did a great job against Hugh Freeze and Peyton Thorne that often. So yeah, I don't see San Diego State scoring a lot of points. I mean, it could be easily 31-3 or 31-7 game, something like that. So yeah, I think Cal, I like that one as well.
All right. So Tom Brady has had a week to sort of digest his initial performance in week one of the NFL season. I'm sure he's getting some coaching. He wasn't good. He was bad. I'm not going to say he was embarrassing. He just was flat. Didn't seem to know when to talk. Barely talked at times. The Ringer's Brian Curtis, who's frequently been on this show, said he thought Tom Brady thought he was in a news conference.
The thing I was most disappointed in was that for most of that game, he sounded like Tom Brady, the quarterback, standing behind a podium, answering a question from the beat guy at the Herald. It never got into that level of analysis we were promised, which is looking inside Tom Brady's brain. And it really started, I'm sure you were watching this game, Texas-Michigan on Saturday. He comes on at halftime with Joel Klatt, and Klatt asks him about Micah Parsons and Myles Garrett, two guys Brady played against. Micah Parsons sacked Brady in his very last game as a quarterback. And Brady had this very, very generic answer that, again, he could have given during a press conference when he was a player. It's almost like he was trying to be unquotable, which is not the job of being an announcer.
And there were moments in the game where I just felt like the one that jumped out at me wasn't even that, because I don't think Tom Brady's going to easily talk about other players. There's just sort of a code in professional athletics where, you know, players don't like to talk bad about other players, especially guys like Tom Brady. And so it wasn't even that. It was a moment where, you know, the play-by-play broadcaster points out that Dak Prescott's contract had been settled that same morning. And then there's a pause. And nobody says anything. And we all know Brady's there. And it's just the perfect moment for Tom Brady to interject himself and go, here's what it's like when you play and you have a contract situation hanging over your head. Or, I got to tell you, you know, in my fourth year, I had, you know, a contract thing that was lingering in the preseason. And once it got settled, man, it really freed me up to focus on the football. There was just some moments there where I just want him to be a real person. And I want him to share the expertise that only he can share. That's, you know, hey, look, it's part of why anybody listens to anyone or watches anything. You're not just watching because it's the only thing on, or because, you know, like when I was a kid, my parents had a Ford F-150 truck and it had a 8-track player in the dash. And my dad got one of the 8-tracks was stuck in there. It was the soundtrack to Rocky, the movie. And so my dad would drive that thing everywhere, and it was like, you know, gonna fly now playing, dun, 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 you know, and he's going down the streets. It would just play over and over and over again. It was stuck. You had no choice. In today's world, you have a choice. And so what I want from Tom Brady, or I'll flip the channel, is I want Tom Brady to give me analysis and expertise and commentary and thoughts that only Tom Brady can give me. And I think Greg Olsen is really good at it. I know Tony Romo drives some people crazy. I like him because I get an idea of what a spaz he is and what it would be like to sit on a sofa next to Tony Romo during a game. And he's going, watch 24, watch 24. You know, he's going to throw the ball to the middle. Like, you know, I don't mind that. You can always just tell him, hey, be quiet, man. We're trying to watch the game here. But I want Brady to kind of, you know, look, if he's not comfortable criticizing players, or he's not comfortable talking about Micah Parsons or getting sacked by him or whatnot, fine. But, you know, there's just some, I could just feel some discomfort. And I watched that thing, and I watched for about 20 minutes, and I was like, where is he? Is he going to say something? And I have to tell you, like, you know, I've been around a lot of locker rooms and been around a lot of news conferences and talked with a lot of athletes. And in the world of celebrity, people tend to view professional athletes and celebrities through a favorable lens. It's why all those stories over the years about the Blazers players, I can remember Martell Webster one time. There was a lady who was trapped in the snow, and it became a big story. Martell Webster pulls over and helps a lady change her flat tire. She was stuck in the snow. What a good guy Martell Webster is. We all know that anybody who comes upon, most people who come upon an elderly person who's trapped in the snow and looking like she doesn't know what she's doing, changing a tire, a lot of people are going to pull over. You're not going to get a news story for it, but a lot of people are going to pull over. When you're a professional athlete or a celebrity, people laugh at your jokes. People say when you hold the door, what a nice guy this guy is. Oh, what a decent human being. He pulled over and helped an old lady. And that's fine. He did the right thing. He helped an old lady. I'm just saying, sometimes you get credit for doing things that normal people would do. Sometimes people laugh at your jokes that aren't that funny. And I think Tom Brady's walking into that world now where he's going to have to stand on his own with his comments and his input and his analysis. And it's not going to just be, oh, that's so funny. What a great story Tom Brady told. He needs to tell a great story. And so I really hope the producers there at Fox are in his ear right now going, hey, we need you to kind of share your personal experience, open the door from that, and talk about what happens in your regular life. Otherwise, people are flipping the channel. All right, coming up at 4:20, it'll be Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach. We'll talk about the Civil War football game on Saturday. Steven and I are going to give some of our picks later this show. Tomorrow, great show. Nick Aliotti, the former Ducks D coordinator, will be joining us, among others. I want you to leave it here. We're headed into hour number two.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Big news day with the Pac-12 taking on four new members. We're going to go around the globe, spanning the globe in this segment. Dan Lanning, University of Oregon football coach, will be joining us coming up later this hour. But I want to start with Boise State Athletic Director Jeremiah Dickey. He was on the show last week, says he's got high hopes in the Pac-12. They'll be joining in 2026.
And I also want to thank the Pac-12. It's been a very obviously stressful process, but very positive. And you all know me well enough. I'm very passionate, especially when it's telling our story. And to be included in something like this, I have so much hope and faith, and I'm bullish on who we are and what we can become.
Jeremiah Dickey and Boise State. Think about Boise State football is, you know, the markets in these other cities that they're bringing in. Colorado State brings Denver. Fresno State brings the Central Valley. It's untapped. It's underrated market, number of households in the Central Valley of California. San Diego State doesn't get you L.A. It's not like USC, UCLA. It's like L.A. light, but you get Southern California, and you get a toe back into Southern California. But Boise State doesn't bring you a lot of households. It brings you a brand in football. It's a great example of how success on the field can get you in the realignment game.
Well, I was going to ask you that because you look at like Washington State and Texas Tech. Their game got a lot of viewers last week. And it does. I know market size matters, obviously, but are we kind of going away from it a little bit and saying it doesn't matter as long as you're a good, successful team? So like a team like Boise State is going to bring in numbers and TV networks are seeing that? Or is it still like, no, you have to have a big media market?
I think it's a blend. You know, I think we've learned that it's a blend, too, between your brand, your media market, and your following and your ratings. So, you know, Oregon's a great example of that. Oregon has the same media market as Oregon State. And what happens? People hold up Oregon State's media market and say, oh, they're in a bad market. And then, or they don't say that about Oregon. Why? Because Oregon wins and Oregon has brand. And so Oregon elevates itself that way. So you can outplay your market, so to speak. Boise State is outplaying the 514,000 households in Boise. And has consistently drawn better ratings than expected. San Diego State, different animal. More TV households down in San Diego County. But, you know, I was out at Snapdragon Stadium last weekend. I didn't feel like everybody in San Diego had to be at that game. San Diego State has some work to do with building back its football brand. It's hired a new head coach, obviously. You know, they get the play caller from Colorado last year. He's a good coach. but he doesn't have any players right now. But the other thing that was interesting last night is, you know, it got to be midnight, got to be 1 a.m. Pac-12's working on this news release that they're going to send out at 6 a.m. And I couldn't help it. It reminded me of the 11th hour couple Augusts ago as the Pac-12 was trying to announce a media rights deal. And San Diego State had a press release ready to announce they were joining the Pac-12. Do you remember that, Stephen? San Diego State was joining the Pac-12, had the news release drafted, and then had to kind of put it away and walk away from the table.
Yeah, that was a weird time. I do remember that really significantly part of it, because it seemed as if it was happening and they were
going to be the 10th team.
Yeah, and the Pac-12 was going to stay together and it was going to be an easy process. And then it all went away.
John David Wicker, J.D. Wicker, is the AD at San Diego State. I talked to him a little bit this morning, and I had talked to him several times over the last couple of years. He got emotional today in talking about his school joining the Pac-12. I want you to listen to this. What does it mean? Well, what does it mean to San Diego State? Listen.
Wow, I wasn't expecting this. I'm thrilled for San Diego State. Our fans, our alumni, our donors. Whew. You know, we've worked hard for this. And we have invested in San Diego State. Our institution has invested. I've told donors forever, the academic institution has to improve as much as the athletic institution. And credit to President De La Torre. Credit to the previous presidents. Provosts, deans, faculties, our students. The academic institution's amazing. The athletic department over the last, 12, 15 years, Jim Stirk's leadership. I was fortunate to work with Jim. All that we've accomplished, we have the best combined football and men's basketball record in Division I. I'm so happy. I'm so proud for our fan base, our alumni, our donors, that we have this opportunity to go into the Pac-12, to create this new Pac-12, and the opportunities that it's going to provide us.
I'll tell you one of the things that I noticed today that was interesting. Oregon State and Washington State fans who have largely been gutted by what happened as all these schools left and suddenly it was a table for two in the Pac-12. I think we're delighted to hear four schools talk about the Pac-12 like it meant a lot to them to be part of it. Because what happened in the end? Everybody was going, oh, we don't want to be part of this thing. We got to get out of here. This conference is doomed. It's broken. It's over. The brand of the conference meant something to Washington State and Oregon State. They have held on to it. They got into Judge Leiby's courtroom in Whitman County and fought for it and ended up saving the brand. And now here comes this conference being reconstituted in a different form. And you can hear J.D. Wicker there, the AD at San Diego State. He's emotional. His voice is cracking. He's thinking and feeling like, he wants to be part of this thing.
It is weird to hear that and feel that way, because I felt a certain way after the Pac-12 kind of went away with Kliavkov. Like, there's a stench about this conference that I don't know that people would want to be a part of. And that has gone away with, the way that Oregon State and Washington State have carried themselves. Now, I still don't know if they should be considered a Power 5 conference, if they get even a Cal and a Stanford as well with these four other teams. I don't know if they should be considered that, but they will be the best of the rest, right? Like, I think they'll be up in that situation where they will be competing for college football playoff spots because, like you said, being that group of five, they're probably the best group of five team in the nation. So I think they're doing it the right way, but it is weird to think just, a couple months ago, even myself thinking, man, the Pac-12 brand has so much just stench to it. Like, I don't know that who would want to be a part of it, but obviously I was wrong on that. And people want to be a part of the Pac-12 brand.
The key is, though, what do they do with those other two seats? Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner, saying that, they've had a lot of interest. I think they know what they want to do with it. Here's Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports talking about this new world Pac-12.
The new Pac-12 wants to be sort of known as the best of the rest, so to speak, all of those outside of the power conference schools. So when it comes to brand power, Dan, television markets, on the field success. You look at all those things. I think they probably will look eastward now and to the state of Texas. Maybe a program like Memphis, Tulane, those Texas schools like Texas State, UTSA, North Texas, maybe even South Florida. I mean, there, that would be a long way away, right? Geography would play a factor as well. But there's certainly those options. And if that fails, Dan, I think they look back east, back west, and they go back to maybe some other Mountain West conference schools.
Hey, I think he's missing it. I think I like Ross. I'm friends with Ross. But I think he's missing it. I think they first look at Stanford and Cal. And I don't see the Pac-12 as a primary first option getting outside of the geographic footprint. Isn't part of the charm of what they're doing the fact that they are bucking the mainstream schools that are all scattered across the country, traveling, sending their volleyball teams and their softball teams through airports on multiple connections, trying to piece together these Olympic sports seasons? Isn't that part of the problem? Isn't that part of what Oregon State and Washington State have said? You know, it doesn't work to have your athletes traveling in all these sports. So why would they go and look east?
But don't they need that Texas market? Because there's so much Texas schools that you could get in there, and I think that would be such a big get. Like, you can argue, we can go out to Texas. Like, that's not – I think that's in the argument of saying the Pac-12.
Maybe, but if you can get Stanford or Cal, I think you're better off. You get the Bay Area, it's a better TV market. You stay true to your geography, and with a straight face, you can say to people, hey, we're not scattered all over the country.
What does, what does this do with, like, Gonzaga? Is that be a thing?
John Willard and I were kicking that around. He was kind of saying, do you think, and I go, are we thinking the same thing? And I'm going to ask you, you're a basketball guy. You know, San Diego State and Boise State are not bad.
No, they're
and
good.
All of a sudden, you've got some basketball schools in this conference that can play. And it starts to make you kind of think about, Gonzaga has not found a home in the Big 12. They don't seem interested. The consultant that the Pac-12 hired, Navigate, Chicago-based consultant firm, you heard me talk about him. I think their fingerprints are all over what happened today. Navigate was also hired by Gonzaga last year. And I kind of wonder if Navigate nudges the Pac-12 a little bit and goes, hey, take Gonzaga as a basketball only. Do you start to see some WCC schools fatten up the basketball product that the Pac-12 could offer? I don't know.
I mean, you got St. Mary's down there as well, who doesn't play football. Like, I mean, they're two of the powers in the West Coast Conference, and even Colorado State has been a really good program the last couple seasons in the Mountain West. The Mountain West has had a really good basketball conference. So you're adding Boise, who's been in the NCAA tournament the last couple of years. San Diego State made it to the national championship game 2 years ago. If you could get a Gonzaga and a St. Mary's, like, that's a really good basketball conference.
That's
as well.
What I'm thinking.
Washington State showed some promise last year, made the NCAA tournament. Like, I think that would be a perfect scenario. If you can get a Cal and a Stanford, and then you can get Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and have them be basketball only, like that would be a really good basketball conference in my mind, and really good get if you can do that.
I just think it's really interesting to see what's happening. And I know the commissioners in the WCC and the Mountain West and the Big Sky are all kind of going, what's the trickle-down effect here? What's going to happen? Tom Wistersill, the Big Sky commissioner, texted me last night when I posted. He was like, wow, like, this is going on. Like, he immediately is probably thinking, I got to guard Montana and Montana State.
Well, what can they do? You know? What can the smaller conferences do to keep their teams in those conferences?
It's hard. I think it's really hard, but I think they got to be proactive. If I'm the Big Sky, it's not a conversation that Gloria Navarez, the Mountain West commissioner, wants to have, but is there a place in the Mountain West for Montana, Montana State? I don't know. What's the Mountain West Conference move here? Because they could just, like anybody else, accept relegation, but she's got a little war chest now, too. Does she go out? Does the Mountain West go out and go, we want Tulane, we want University of Texas, San Antonio, we want Memphis? You know, what's the move by the Mountain West?
The Dakotas?
You get South Dakota, North Dakota. They good FCS programs. Do you add them? Do you add Montana, Montana State? I don't know. But it's certainly worth thinking about. Meanwhile, Kirk Herbstreit says he's looking at Oregon and he thinks something's wrong with Oregon. We're going to have Dan Lanning on. I'll ask him.
Bo Nix meant so much to that team. You can never underestimate what a great leader can mean to a football team's focus. And there's been so much preseason hype with Oregon. I'm sure Dan Lanning is doing his best to get these guys to lock in, to respect the opponent. Boise's a dangerous team anytime you play them. But they don't look like they have the same fight that they had last year. It's only two games, but I think they should stop listening and reading their press clippings and get focused on work, because they remember when they played Nebraska early in the year last year, and Dan got some negative press from some people, not us, but some people, because he said they're about clicks and we're about, you know, whatever
Colorado,
he said. We're about
Colorado, not Nebraska.
Colorado. Yeah, Colorado. I apologize.
Oh, good.
They're about clicks and we're about hitting people kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just thought that's who they were. They kind of played with a chip on their shoulder all year long. They couldn't get it done against Washington twice, but they had a bit of a nastiness about them. I haven't seen that yet from this team in these first two games. They look like they're more about, hey, we'll turn it on when we get to whoever, you know, and that'll eventually catch up to them unless they get this thing turned around. They have the ability. They can win as many games as they want, but they got to get their mind right.
I don't agree with Herb Street. I don't think it's a flipping of the switch that Oregon is trying to do. I think there's some chemistry issues with 11 or 12 or 13 guys who are in the starting lineup in week one or week two, who haven't really played alongside each other, who are learning a new system. Dylan Gabriel has been around for a few months. He's got an offensive lineman who's, you know, playing center for the first time, you know, this as a college athlete. And he's got a right guard and a left guard who haven't played alongside that center for very many games or even practices. And I think that takes time. And I think it's one of the byproducts of this transfer portal era. I don't think Oregon's alone. Florida State having some problems. They're transfer heavy. And so I kind of wonder if the curse that Oregon ran into this season is that they started their year playing a FCS opponent in Idaho who had some guys who had been in that program 2 and 3 and 4 years. And then who do they play in week two? Boise State. A lot of culture there. Guys who understand what, you know, it is to play at Boise State. So I think Oregon can fix this, and I think some of it takes time. I don't want to overreact, but I don't think it's, oh, we can flip the switch. I don't think it's that. I'll ask Dan Lanning. Maybe I'm wrong.
Do you think they can get that fixed by the Ohio State game? I mean, that's the game we're all looking forward to. Can they get to that game, and can they get to that game undefeated? Like that, I mean, that's the worry. That's the worry about it. If they can't, because they can't fix it, John. This game is losable. The Michigan State game, I mean, the way they won their last game, like, is that losable? UCLA? I don't know, but I feel like they should be 5-0 when they play out Ohio State, but they got to figure something out.
I'm going to ask Dan Lanning coming up. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I'm a dog person. If you're a dog person, you know what I'm talking about when I say I'm a dog person, I think it says something about you. Is Dan Lanning a dog person? Dan Lanning, did you grow up with a dog?
You're going to be so disappointed. I am not. I mean, I grew up in the country where you you put out a bucket, like a 5-gallon bucket of water, and you know, you put out like a big bucket of dog food, and then the dog hung out outside. You know, he didn't come inside. You know, he's like kind of a like part livestock, part dog. You know what I mean? So I was good with that. But no, we don't have any dogs. We don't have any cats. We're not really pet people. We got 3 kids. That's enough. You know.
See, we only had an acre. You were on like 5.5. We had outside dogs too, and it confused me when people had their dogs inside because I didn't understand what they were doing. I was like, that dog comes in the house,
And we had the same thing. The dog slept like outside or in the garage, and that was it.
Really cold. You open the garage up, but you know, a couple towels down. Exactly. My mom, when I got older, she got like a Yorkshire Terrier, like a little barking dog. But I wouldn't say that I was ever really keen to that.
I noticed the kids are now wearing jerseys that have Lanning on the back of it. That's an upgrade.
Is that new? Is that different?
I think it is, because I think they were wearing like other players. I talked to you about this once. You don't remember our conversations because you have too many interviews. But it's the kids were wearing like a Jackson Powers Johnson jersey, like years ago.
Like Noah Sewell or
Yeah, but it seems like they got their own jerseys now. Like that, grandma or grandpa probably did that.
Kudos. That's got to be kudos to Kenny Farr, the best equipment manager in the nation. That's got to be Kenny that pulled that off. But I'm gonna take your word for it. I didn't recognize it.
Okay, when you let's say you open your drawer at home, I gotta think you just have like all duck stuff. Like, how do you? Because you could have an unlimited supply of it. Like, how do you decide what you're keeping and you know what you don't want to wear? You know, how does that go with your wardrobe?
I like what's comfortable, right? I'm kind of a routine guy. Like, I kind of wear some of the same sort of stuff every single day, and you probably don't see me in polos very often. So usually when I get a polo, I'm like, okay, save that. We can give that to somebody, you know, things like that. I mean, every once in a while I might wear one, but, I kind of wear the same things. And I also think like once you kind of identify what you wear, that's kind of what you get, right? Like a lot of long sleeve tees, hoodies every once in a while, but, I get some extra stuff. Sophie and I kind of pull our stuff. And when people come to games, I always just tell them, I hope you're an XL, you know, like if you're an XL, you can wear all, we got a lot of stuff for you. If not, then I don't necessarily have a ton of gear for them.
You're watching film, you're watching Oregon State. What do you see?
Yeah, a team that, you know, has an identity. I think Coach Bray does a great job coaching those guys. Obviously, he's already, you know, close to the program already, but it reminds me a lot of previous Oregon State teams, you know, a team that runs the ball well, is able to take shots. You know, they still have elements of trick plays, you know, just like they have in the past. They play well on special teams. They're sound on defense. I mean, it's a good football team.
They are getting into favorable down and distance on third down. What do you call that in football? Like, you know,
they're
in third
on schedule.
They're
staying on schedule, right? Right, they're not in second and 10, and because they're not in second and 10, they're in second and 5, and because they're in second and 5, they can get to third and 2, right?
Yeah, I was looking at their down and distance in that San Diego State game, and it was third and 1, third and 1, third and 2, third and 3. And, you know, they're 7th in the country on third down conversions, and I'm like, "Oh, that's why." Because that is a manageable thing, and you probably know you can go for it on fourth if you don't get it on third and you're in that situation, but you know, are they any different to you? Like, would you see differences with a Trent Bray team versus Jonathan Smith, or does it kind of just look like it, you know, they continued their identity?
Well, I think there's certain differences. I think it's also probably too early right now to say what are those differences, but there are some, you know, a little bit different flavors on offense, a couple things that are different, maybe a little more gun game than, you know, out of the gun game than under center. But altogether, there's a lot of similarities still. You know, maybe a little bit more of a variation of defense than they've had in the past. But I'd say it looks similar in a lot of ways.
I'm going to throw a theory at you. You tell me if I'm full of it or if I'm astute. I'm paying attention. Is there something to? You've got some transfers. It takes time for guys to gel. We're watching, you know, a band of transfers who maybe have been with the program a few months play against some teams in Idaho and Boise State who have had guys that have played together for several seasons. Is there anything to that in what we're seeing on game day with you guys?
Well, that sounds like a cop-out to me, doesn't it?
I don't know. I mean, is there a reality in college basketball? It happens. You see, like, some of the mid-majors that have older players beat teams that have higher recruited players who are young?
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's some truth to it, but that just sounds like an excuse to me, right? Like, we don't get the luxury of excuses. Like, go perform. Go do your job, right?
Look like you found something in the third quarter with shuffling the guard and the center around. And what went on there? What personnel-wise, what were you guys doing? Tinkering with something, or do you think you found something there?
Well, we actually did it earlier in the game as well. We came into the plan knowing that we were going to try a couple different looks, you know, on the offensive line until we can find a rhythm. And then I thought we also just made a commitment to running the ball a little bit better also in that quarter. I don't know if we committed to running it as well in the first half. You know, and part of that goes back to being on schedule, like you just talked about with Oregon State. You know, when you get a penalty and it's first and 15, you know, as opposed to first and 10 or second and 13 instead of second and 5, right? That's going to limit your ability to run the ball well because you're kind of playing behind the chains. So I think it was just more of that, a commitment to really, you know, stay on schedule, eliminate negative plays, and we still had some. You know, so there's still some room for improvement there. But we saw a couple different groups on the offensive line. And I think the longer we'll play, the closer we'll have continuity. But, you know, we did some of that here in the past. Every year I've been here, we've had some rotation there with guys that we think can play winning football. And I think we're still figuring out what that looks like and how that looks.
The what's your peeve? The penalty that irks you the most? You know, you get flagged for something. What's the one where you go, we can't have that one?
Yeah, any post-snap, you know, or pre-snap penalty. Like penalties of aggression that happen within the play, you know, sometimes I can understand that because you ask these guys to play the game a certain way. But a post-snap unnecessary roughness or pre-snap penalty because of, you know, poor execution of an assignment or alignment, you know, those to me are really frustrating. You know, I think those are selfish penalties that you have to eliminate.
You asked me a great question about, like, you know, on radio, how someone gets in my ear or I'm talking to you, or, you know, how do I manage that? And then, you know, I was asking you about the communication you have with your guys on the field. I want to ask you too, like, is this, we hear that football is a simple game, you know, you block, you tackle, you do, but it feels incredibly complex when we start getting in the weeds about personnel and reads. And is it a simple game still, or has the game become more complex, and does it require these guys to think more? You tell me what you've seen in your career coaching.
I would say it's a really simple game that coaches like myself and others, we make it really, really complicated because we spend a lot of time on the details, right? And the details, the minute details that create success, whether it's a one-inch step, one direction, or it's eye placement, or it's recognizing, you know, an opponent's front or, you know, offensive set, you know, those minute details are where it becomes complicated, but it still becomes, you know, about simple execution, still the part that matters.
The practice days of the week, not game day, because you're always going to love game day, but what's your favorite practice day? Is it a Monday, Tuesday? What's your favorite day?
Good question. Probably a Tuesday or Wednesday. You know, I enjoy those days the most.
Why?
Those are the most physical practices for us. The most intense practices, the most physical practice, the longest practice. I enjoy being on the practice field. You know, those are fun, but you get to see some shots in practice, some guys, you know, banging on each other and executing the plan and getting better, you know?
I like how you gave me a good question there. I appreciate that, because I think sometimes there's dumb questions, right? If I ask a dumb question, I want you to tell me, like, hey, that's a dumb question. Bad take.
Yeah.
It's okay to give me that.
I'll definitely do that. If you give me one, don't worry.
You know what I'm doing right now? I'm watching Sopranos again. Went back to the beginning.
There you go.
Started over. You ever do that? Do you go back? Like, is there a show you want to do that with in the off season?
Narcos would probably be the one. I thought Narcos was really good. Ooh. What do you think of the ending of Sopranos?
It's too controversial. I need something more. I need to know what happened. I don't need you to leave it up to me. That's your job as the show. The writers of that show and the actors should have told me what happened. They shouldn't leave an interpretation. This is not art. Like, you tell me, did he die? What do you think happened?
I mean, yeah, definitely, right? But you wish, I'm with you. I wish they would just tell us.
Just tell us. Put on a song, make me guess, and now I got to go to work and talk to people and ask, you know, people who don't know. Yeah, I don't need to do that.
Well, it was the goal for us to keep talking about it, because here we are several years later. Still,
I know. But, you know, that show holds up. I'm watching it like those Paulie, come on, Silvio, it just holds up. I don't know. Maybe it's the Italian in me, but I like those guys. I like those mobsters. I'm rooting for them.
No doubt. No doubt. Best mob movie of all time. What is it?
Godfather 2 is what you're going to say.
No, well, what I'm going to say.
What are you going to say?
That's good, though. Casino, probably.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, why do you like Casino? Road to Perdition. Road to Perdition is a little bit of a different one too, but I mean, Godfather 2 is great, no doubt.
You have dark taste.
Why Casino? Why Casino? I mean, part of it's about Kansas City a little bit, so I kind of like that part. You know, started with the Kansas City mob a little bit. So, but beyond that, I just think it's a good movie.
How are you feeling? You know, you've had multiple civil wars. You're approaching this thing, and there's such a thing as too much emotion. I was talking about this earlier. With, you know, you want your guys to be focused but hyped, right? You want emotion to be part of the game. You want your guys to play violently and with some passion and emotion, but not so much so that they're making mistakes. How do you manage that as a coach, or is that something individuals have to manage themselves?
No, I mean, I think that's part of our job, of trying to have a pulse on where guys are at, and then try to light a fire when it's necessary, or, you know, calm them down when necessary. But that's also each individual player's, you know, job too, to make sure that they're in the right headspace and spot to perform the way they need to perform. So that's part of the fun of coaching, right?
Does the game feel long to you when you're out there coaching a game, or does it happen and you go, man, where did it go?
I've been a part of both. Yeah, I've been a part of both. Been days where it's like, man, this is long, get me off this field. And then, man, it feels like we're just getting started. So, yeah, I've experienced all of those.
Is there a reason why it feels long, or, you know, is it because, you know, people are throwing the ball too much, or is it the flow of the game? What makes a game feel long or short?
Yeah, a combination of the number of plays within a game, right, which usually happens because the ball's getting thrown, or, like, let's say you're getting your ass kicked, right, and you're like, gosh, get me off this field, right? Those can be really long games sometimes.
Right.
Been a part of a few of those. And then vice versa, you know, you get to give it to somebody, and you're like, all right, let's get this thing rolling. So I've experienced them all.
All right. Good luck to you Saturday. I'll see you at the stadium. I appreciate you coming on with us. You have any questions for me before you go?
I like this new tradition. What's for dinner tonight?
I have not been outside. I have been focused on all this Pac-12 stuff that's going on. That starts for me at like 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, this nonsense. I don't know what's going on in the world. My family might have gone on vacation. I don't even know what happened. But that is a question I have to answer later. But I would go for, like,
no plan right now.
Nope. There probably is a plan that I'm not aware of, but I don't know if that.
Not in charge of the plan.
Not in charge of the plan. I would like to go for, like, my grandmother's spaghetti sauce tonight, and red sauce, spaghetti, maybe Italian sausage with it. That is what I'm in the mood for. What's for dinner tonight for you?
That great question, and I'm also not in charge of that, so we will see. I would definitely be down for a Cambodian dish tonight if Sophia felt like, you know, coming up with something. But we'll see. We'll see what the plan of attack is. Titan has football practice, so first, you know, we're going to run them over there and check that out, and then we'll see what's up and rolling whenever we get back.
What's that like for you when Titans plan?
It's awesome. It's awesome, right? It's fun to see your kids fired up to be doing something, and
But can you be a dad? Can you just be a dad, and, you know, or do you?
Yeah. I don't go out there. But right, I don't go out there. I get enough people telling me how to do my job. It's not my job to go tell somebody how to do theirs. Right.
So, I'm not telling. I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. But listen, good luck to you.
I mean, I wanted to go be a dad and watch him play, and then I'll give him a couple thoughts afterwards. But go play football, son. Go have fun.
I love it. All right, have fun Saturday. I'll see you at the stadium. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks, John. Have a good one.
All right. There he goes. His favorite gangster movie, mobster movie, is Casino. I thought for sure he'd go Godfather 2. He's got a little Road to Perdition in there, too. He's got a little bit of a dark taste. Have you noticed that? All right. Coming up, we have a lot to get to. We're going to give our picks for the weekend. The 5 at 5's coming up. We're going to lead you right into Thursday Night Football. Appreciate Jaden Robinson, Oregon State defensive back, Dan Lanning, Oregon coach, guest on today's show. Yesterday, we had Trent Bray, the Oregon State coach. Tomorrow, Nick Aliotti will be joining us in the 5 o'clock hour. I told Nick Aliotti I want him to be the last thing we hear before we get off into talking about the Civil War football game. He's going to be the last analysis of the game we get on a Friday. So Nick Aliotti
in hour number three tomorrow. I want you to leave it here. You get the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Good stuff with Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach. Appreciate everybody who makes this radio show part of their day. If you're reading me now, you're reading me at johncanzano.com. I appreciate people who get a free subscription or get a paid subscription. It means a lot to me that you're reading there. I love being directly connected with my readers now in a way that never before. There's no arm's length. I am writing, you're reading, I'm working for you there. So go to johncanzano.com. If you would like to see what I have to say about the Pac-12's latest move. It's got a little Mountain West flavor to it, of course, but I want to see what happens with the final two spots. Is it Cal and Stanford first that they go after? Can they peel them away from the ACC, or will the ACC have an event that causes Cal and Stanford to shake loose? We shall see. Could this be Tulane in Memphis, University of Texas, San Antonio? Could it be that the Pac-12 eventually falls back and goes, hey, UNLV, Air Force? Or will the Mountain West now, with a little additional money to spend, be able to hang on to those kinds of members? We shall see what happens on that front. We got a couple of rivalry football games, three, really, in college football that I want to focus on in this segment. One is called the Civil War. Oregon State and Oregon play this game. They have played it since 1894, and they will play it again on Saturday at Research Stadium. It'll be on Fox. The Beavers and the Ducks will be kicking that game off. Stephen, I'm going to go with point spreads that were fresh this morning, so we don't jump around. I want to go with consistent point spreads. Go, these lines may have moved by a half a point here or there, but it's Oregon at Oregon State at 12:30 Saturday on Fox. Oregon is favored by 16.5, maybe 16 now. But Stephen, who are you leaning towards in this game?
I'm leaning toward the Beavers. I there's no way I can pick the Ducks right now to cover that point spread with the way that they've played the first two games and the questionable play on the offensive line. I just don't know how you can fix that within a week. It can get better, but I just don't know how you can fix it to be a really good unit so far. So I think Oregon State's going to be able to get some pressure on the quarterback. And the way Oregon State plays, John, you know, they're going to run the football. They're going to play defense. They're going to, you know, grind it out. It's going to be a lot, not a lot of possessions. You know, small possession game. Give me 16.5 points, man. That's a lot of points. I think Oregon wins the game by 10, but I do think Oregon State stays within that number.
I think Oregon's going to win the game. I agree with you. I don't think they cover. And if everything goes right for Oregon State, this is a game that will be played in the 20s. Oregon State wants to possess the ball. They did it in the first 2 weeks. They want to run. They want to stay on schedule, as Dan Lanning is saying. That's what he sees on film. It's what I've seen in the stadium. They want to be in third and short. They want to keep the ball. They want to have long drives. You know, they don't, you know, to their detriment, they don't have the explosive playmaker at the wide receiver or even tight end position that can just kill a defense with one play. They don't have that guy, but they've got good running backs and they have a plan. I don't love the passing game at Oregon State. Giovanni McCoy, you know, has been okay. Better last week. Not very good in week one. But they have enough to hurt you if you bring up eight guys and just try to pay too much attention to the line of scrimmage. But if everything goes right, Oregon State's in this game. It's a one-score game.
Does Oregon State need to be able to cause a turnover or have Giovanni McCoy hit a big play down the field to win this game? Or can they win the first, like they did the first two games, by just running the football and pounding it down their throat?
They can win running and pounding, but they'll need help. They'll need Oregon to continue to be sloppy. And the thing that Oregon has that Oregon State does not have is Oregon has the ability with a Trayshawn Holden or one of the running backs or a punt return or a kick return. Oregon has the ability to on one play come up with 7 points. And Oregon State doesn't really have that. And And so it's going to take 11 play drive. And to Oregon State's credit, they've done that to this point of the season. So the reason why I like Oregon to win the game is I think Oregon comes up with one of those plays. And I think it's something like 28-22 if Oregon State plays its game. Like, that's the game Oregon State wants to play. It's a one-score game. So 16, 16 and a half, 18 points, 20, whatever this spread is, take the points. I think the Beavers are within a score in this game. I think it's going to be a really good game. But a game that they win, I think Oregon is out there slopping around like they did in the first 2 weeks. Maybe they're turning the ball over, and they can't get Oregon State off the field. And to me, that is a game that Oregon State wins, 27-24.
I just worry about that Oregon State offense. Can't they produce enough offensively to win that game? I think they can do it to stay in the game, stay close, but the Oregon defensive line has been decent. Like, even Ashton Jensen, he had a big game, 190 yards or whatever, but he had numerous runs that were negative runs or, under 3 yards. Like, Oregon did a decent job. They let him pop off for a couple big-time runs. Besides those big runs, they kind of bottled them up. Like, I worry about Oregon State getting in third and six, third and seven, and Javonte McCoy having to make a play and not making a mistake.
Do you remember when USC came to Research Stadium a couple of seasons ago and all that offense with Caleb Williams and Trent Bray dialed him up, and they had a great plan. The noise bothered Caleb Williams. He couldn't audible at the line of scrimmage. It took away all of USC's motion. They couldn't motion. They had to just line up and run plays. Made it very easy for the Oregon State defensive backs. I can see Oregon State giving Oregon some trouble. I think Oregon State plays hard. I think defensively, the defensive coordinator, Keith Hayward, knows what he's doing. I think Trent Bray will come with a plan as well. I think defensively, I think Oregon State will be all right. And the goal there is to not give up a big play on special teams or not give up a 59-yard touchdown on a slant pass. But I watched Oregon State last week against San Diego State in person, and it was a 7-0 game that they dominated through three quarters. They had dominated it. Statistically, they should have been ahead 28-0, and it was 7-0. And I thought, gosh, if they do this against the Ducks, all Oregon needs is a play or two. And it reminded me of 2 years ago with Caleb Williams and USC just made a couple plays and won the game 17-14. I think this game will be lower scoring than Vegas thinks it'll be. But I'll take the Ducks to win, Beavers to cover.
And you talk about that crowd at Research Stadium. This is going to be the first time that Oregon State's played Oregon in front of the full Research Stadium with the new renovations. Remember back in 2022, the game where they came back with all the runs, as Jaden Robinson talked about, that was only half the stadium. Like, this is going to be a full stadium. I imagine this place is going to be really loud.
It should be. So got to give them something to cheer about, though. Apple Cup, neutral site, Lumen Field, Washington State 2-0, Washington 2-0, 12:30, same kickoff time. Gonna be hard to watch both those games. I'll be in the stadium at Research Stadium, so I'll watch one in person. I may have the other one playing on my laptop or something, but this game will be on Peacock. Washington, now just a 4.5 point favorite. A lot of fans said, oh, I wish this game was taking place in November. It sucks that it's taking place in week 3. The Washington State fans are saying that. I'm like, no, this is where you want this game to be played. Jake Dickert is, he has it dialed in right now. They have the best win of any of the teams in the Pacific Northwest. They beat Texas Tech handily. And I like what he's getting out of his quarterback. I think they have enough on offense to win this game. So I think they're going to win the game outright. They're getting 4.5. Take it if they're giving it. But I think it's something like 31-27 Washington State in an upset.
Yeah, I think this one's going to be high scoring because I do think John Mateer, the quarterback of Washington State, is really good. And that Washington State defense, I have a lot of questions about. So I think Washington will be able to score as well. I think Washington wins this game. I think they're just a little more talented than Washington State. I think Jed Fish will be good enough. I think he's a really good coach, and I think he had a great strategy last season against Washington State. I think he can kind of run that a little bit back this year with some of the pieces they have, and they'll have some type of game plan. I think the crowd's going to be mostly Washington, more than Washington State, so I think that does play into it a little bit. So I'm going to take Washington to win. I think it'll be a close game, but I think Washington wins by a touchdown.
Other rivalry game, the third rivalry game, Colorado State, both 1-1, 4:30 Saturday on CBS. Colorado looked bad last week, losing to Nebraska. A lot of finger pointing after the game. I think this is a really close game. Colorado's a 7.5-point favorite. I'm doing it again, Stephen. I'm picking another dog to win outright. I think Colorado State beats Colorado. My score is 31-30. Great game.
Ooh, parlay those together. I like that odds. Yeah, I'm with you. I think Colorado State wins the game. I think that there is a lot of hostility show towards Colorado in this one for Colorado State. They've had this game circled since the loss last season. Like, they didn't have a good year last year. They lost to Texas earlier this season. But I think they've circled this game, and they're going to be ready to go. The fact that they just got announced in the Pac-12, I think that puts a little more emphasis on it as well. Like, this is why we're bringing Colorado State to the conference. So I think you're right. I don't like Colorado's offensive line. Defensively, I think their defensive line has been good. But offensively, man, if you can run the football on them and you can get after Shador, which everybody has done so far, you can beat that Colorado team. So I think Colorado State does that. I think Colorado State wins with you. I think they win outright.
Torrey Holton, wide receiver, Colorado State, summing it up.
We owe them one. And that's just something that's been sitting on everybody's, you know, mind since we came back from break. You know, we owe them. And we walked away from that game, you know, as, you know, we kind of left it all on the field. I don't feel like we left it all on the field because we should have murdered them guys. And, you know, they came out with that attitude as they were on top of the world. And this ain't no Cinderella story, so.
Hey, it's not a Cinderella story.
We should have murdered those guys, man.
I was like, no, don't say that. But you get the impression. That was one of the best football games of the year. I remember, like, the whole family. My, you know, now 8-year-old was on the edge of the sofa. You know, the 10-year-old was into this game. And so it'll be interesting to see if this game can hold the audience like last year.
It's one of those things where it's the rivalry game, and it's no matter what Colorado State does this year, if they're 3-9 on the season, but they beat Colorado, successful season in everybody's mind. So I think that's kind of their mindset going in, where I don't know if Colorado has that same exact mindset about Colorado State.
Meanwhile, Arizona State, undefeated so far, up 7-0 on Texas State. How about Kenny Dillingham? Like, if he can start 3-0, you know, they have a tough schedule in the Big 12. But if Arizona State can start this season 3-0, Kenny Dillingham is going to a bowl game. Like, he's going, you know, you can get to a bowl game if you're Arizona State. You know, if you get this 3-0 start, so it'll be really key to see what they can do. The 5 at 5 is coming up. Leave it here.
Hey. BFFT. From the Pack West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
It'll be a college football Saturday. Well, we have college football on Thursday night and Friday, and sometimes it appears on a Sunday. The NFL, we got big games coming up in the weekend. Tomorrow we'll tell you what's on tap, as we do every Friday. Nick Eliotti will be joining us tomorrow, former Oregon defensive coordinator. We've had good guests all week long. Steven's going to take us home here with the 5 at 5. And by home, I mean he's going to lead us right into Thursday night football. Steven, are you ready?
The 5 at 5.
I think that means yes.
Number one.
Well, the big news of the day, John, the Pac-12, they have reformed a little bit as they have added 4 new members. San Diego State, Fresno State, Boise State, and Colorado State all will be joining the Pac-12. So they'll be joining Oregon State and Washington State. So the conference now at 6 teams. They're going to have to get up to 8 teams to be considered a real conference. So there's some more talk about that, as Pac-12 Commissioner Teresa Gould has said there's been significant interest from other schools over the last 18 hours in joining the Pac-12. But Pac-12 off to a good start, adding some teams, and I'm sure there'll be more on this coming up soon.
I'm curious to see what they do with those 2 slots that are open. They have to get to 8 by July 1st, 2026. They could go beyond 8. Scott Barnes, your athletic director at Oregon State, once upon a time said he preferred to stay nimble. I'm not thinking that they're going to go crazy and create an East and West division and add a bunch of schools from the American, but I think there is more ball to play, so to speak.
What do you think the max number of teams in that conference will be? 10 or 12? Or could it be higher?
I mean, I think they could go to 10. I don't think they want to get big like they were before. There's some problems with sort of the membership when you get you know, I think some of the other conferences are finding out at 18 and, 16 teams that you start to get too big, stop being a conference. But I think there's, that there's a chance here that they go to 8 and maybe create a pot of 4 somewhere. Maybe they go to 10. But
do you think they would stop at 8 for any reason, or do they have to get to 10?
100% they'd stop at 8. Yeah, 8 is all they need. You start bringing more people in, you got more mouths to feed, too. Keep that on your mind as well. Let's think about this. Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, Oregon State, San Diego State, Washington State. 3 of those are not really states, but they all end in state.
Number 2.
San Jose State. Got to get them in there.
Yeah, maybe. Just Texas State. I don't know.
There you go. Well, John, on October, on August 22nd, Yankees center fielder and slugger designator Aaron Judge, well, he joined the Paw Patrol, Rebel and Crew. He had 100 home runs in their home run derby on the animated show. But you know what? That's a cartoon. In real life, he has not hit a home run since his guest appearance on that show. His last home run came on August 25th and went over the Rockies just one day before that episode aired. It's a home run drought of 15 games, which ties Judge's longest career drought of 15 games without a home run. Judge has 51 home runs this season. Before the show, he was on pace for an American League record 63. Now he's on pace for 57. We can blame the Paw Patrol for Aaron Judge and his slump right now at the plate.
I know way too much about Paw Patrol because my daughters, I said to them, what TV show are you going to remember when you're like in college or older being that formative TV show? Because my oldest daughter, she was big on Blue's Clues, and nice to see that the guy from Blue's Clues has surfaced on social media and he's saying, hey man, I just needed a break. These other two Rugrats are going, oh, it's going to be Paw Patrol 100%.
Yeah, my oldest loved Paw Patrol. We had all the little Paw Patrol toys, but I think that just goes to show, like, don't be joining these cartoon shows.
How many of the Paw Patrol dogs characters can you name?
Oh, all of them. Chase, Marshall, Rocky, Rubble, Sky.
Rubble's Zuma. How about Zuma?
Yeah, Zuma, and then we also got Everest, yeah. Tracker,
Ryder. Mayor Goodway.
Mayor Humdinger. If it's foggy out, me and my wife still call it Foggy Bottom. We go, oh, it's Foggy Bottom outside.
Are we on 3 now?
We are.
Number 3.
Foggy Bottom.
Well, we haven't really addressed this, John, but I'm going to address it now. Shannon Sharp, he went on Instagram Live. He engaged in some adult consenting acts with a woman. Okay.
His private time was broadcast.
Yes, and ESPN, they are not going to discipline him for this. On the Instagram Live, a source told TMZ that Sharp's absence from Thursday's First Take today had nothing to do with what happened on Instagram Live, and that he is expected to be back on Monday. Now, of course, Sharp, he came out and said that he was hacked, but he has now cleared that up and admitted that it was him on the video. and this was him explaining exactly what happened.
Came in, I threw my phone on the bed. Engaged in an activity. I did not know IG Live. I've never been on IG Live. I've never turned IG Live on. So I don't know how it works. And so all of a sudden, my other phone is going off and people are calling me FaceTime that I've never talked to a day in my life on FaceTime. And it didn't. I'm like, why are y'all calling me FaceTime? And after a while, Jamie, he said, Shannon, you're on IG Live. I'm like, doing what? You know, I'm like, what am I on IG Live for? I ain't hit no IG Live button.
Sharp says he is embarrassed that this went out. He's not apologizing for the act itself. He's apologizing for that it went out over the Instagram Live feed. But no punishment will be faced for Shannon Sharp.
I don't think ESPN should punish him, but I also don't believe that it was an accident. I think it helps him. It's positive in a lot of ways. Everybody's talking about him.
I will say the phone. So he said he throws the phone on the bed. It was on like a desk. So it showed the desk. It is kind of like if you are going to broadcast it, it's perfect because you can't see anything. So like if you don't want to show anything, but you want people to know like, hey, what I'm doing, it was set up pretty perfect.
I don't know. I would love to hear from listeners. Have you accidentally gone on Instagram Live? Are we on 4 now?
We are.
We're crawling along here.
Number 4.
Sorry, man.
Man. I had to address it. I had to. It was number six. It was number six yesterday.
You said yesterday we weren't going to bring it up. What happened in 24 hours?
It was just, I don't know. It was number six. It's been in my mind. I just thought, you know what? Instagram Live, I don't know how to do it. All right.
You can't unhear that.
You can't. Go. Yeah, it's not safe for work. Make sure you're at home when you're listening to this Instagram Live. On Sunday, the Jaguars, they're going to be playing the Browns in Jacksonville, but the Jaguars are going to change their stadium right before the game, John. Usually it's named Everbank Stadium, but the team instead is going to name it Trevor Bank Stadium, renamed after the quarterback Trevor Lawrence as part of his collaboration with the team's naming rights sponsor, Everbank. And by the time this game kicks off on Sunday, crews will have added temporary signage throughout the stadium that says Trevor Bank Stadium. Lawrence said, "I don't like having too much of the spotlight with stuff like that, but I think it was clever. They have the name rights for the stadium, so it's a good play on words, and I was fine with that." Lawrence does have a collaboration with the Jacksonville-based financial service company. He did that last month. He's appeared in a lot of commercials and social media, things like that. But it made me think, like, NIL money? Are these college kids going to be getting, you know, stadium naming rights to go to these schools or what? Like, is this something in the future that could be happening?
I have some documents from a conference that I will name later, where they're listing some of the potential NIL opportunities for athletes. And it included things like, could athletes individually sell the ability for a sponsor to put a patch on their individual jersey, not like the team as a whole, but could, you know, it's nothing. They'd have to get approval from the NCAA. Now, the NCAA will allow a patch, but will they allow, like, you to have Toyota on your jersey and I have Ford on mine,
like a specific player?
Yeah, specific player selling that stuff. So I think, you know, there's a lot of real estate here that will be investigated, and no doubt you'll see, you know, naming rights on, just, you can sell naming rights on just about anything, can't you?
Yeah.
You've seen parents who will sell naming rights on their children. There was a guy, the family once upon a time that did this several years ago, where they said they reached out to Fortune 500 companies and said, "Hey, we'll let you name our child.
Can we get the BFT end zone? You know, like a University of Oregon or something?"
All the companies wisely steered away from it. Like, Snickers didn't want the kid to be named Snickers.
Well, and in the NBA, there's specific rules because guys wanted to get tattoos, I remember, of different companies, and you cannot have that.
It's your arm. Yeah, I hope it was your arm.
Number five.
What you got?
Finally, Thursday Night Football in the NFL on Amazon Prime and on 750 The Game. Check it out. Bills at the Dolphins. Dolphins 2.5-point favorites. Raheem Mostert out, but Devon Achane will be playing. Bills, Dolphins, John, who you got?
Bills. I'll take the Bills.
Tua 1-6 in his career against the Buffalo Bills.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go Bills. Initially, I went Dolphins, but I talked to my dad, and he went Bills.
I should
Bills.
Go Dolphins then.
I've been off. My dad went Bills. He talked me into it.
I was going to wait for you to make your pick. All right, we're back tomorrow with a great Friday show. Nick Aliotti will be with us, the former Oregon defensive coordinator. Plus, we'll have a bunch to talk about. I am sure this is all developing, all unfolding. It's been a big news day. Read me at johnconzano.com, and I'll catch you tomorrow.